Hey, podcasters, welcome to another edition of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. I'm your host, Tim Estradol. I've taken a couple weeks off for the holidays. We are back, and this week's segment is brought to you by the Honda Snowblower. Yes, Big Red, if you follow on our Facebook page lately, we got a loaner of a heavy-duty, commercial-grade Honda Snowblower from Honda Power Equipment. And yesterday, we had a snow emergency in my town, which means that if you lived on the through streets, or they're going to plow, they're going to tow your car out of the way to make room because the snow came down so heavy. I think we got about 6 inches of snow in the span of 5 or 6 hours. Used the Honda snowblower a couple times to clear off the driveway and clear off the streets, or clear off the sidewalks, not the streets. Although I could have cleared off the streets with the snowblower. It is quite the machine. I've named it Big Red because it's big and it's red. It's a complex name. You got to make sure you follow along with that one. It's HSS1332AT, if you want to know the model name. I'm not sure who came up with that. Things ridiculously long. Maybe engineering came up with that name. Definitely not marketing. It's 389cc's of engine power, which is 11.7 horsepower. Yes, 11.7 horsepower out of a commercial-grade snowblower. You got to go on Facebook. Check us out on Pickup Truck Talk. See the photos. See the beast. And follow along. Moving along, let's talk about some news happening in this week. We have the Ford F-150 hybrid. Yes, a hybrid F-150. Hybrid's been talking about with trucks for many years. It's like the holy grail of trucks. Ideally, you want to do this because if you talk about fuel economy, you cannot get the great fuel economy you can out of natural aspirated engines. You have to go turbocharged, you have to go diesel, or you do a hybrid. Hybrid would use a combination of a small displacement turbocharged engine along with a battery and electric motor. The idea is to give you that fuel economy for driving around town and for all your daily driving, and still have a little bit of towing and hauling capacity for the jobs when you need to do the work for them. Ford made the announcement in kind of a weird press conference where they lauded the Trump's administration, gave them a vote of confidence when they canceled the plant in Mexico, and they opened a big investment line for the Flat Rock, Michigan facility. They're going to spend $700 million, which results in 70 jobs. So, 700 jobs. Still is sounding better. That's like $1 million per job. It's kind of an interesting press conference. They're going to do a F-150 hybrid and a Mustang hybrid. Yeah, Mustang hybrid. That's going to be interesting. Anyways, things you ought to know. They're anticipating 2020 to come out with it. I have five expectations I wrote about, which I'll put on the website here pretty soon. I expect, number one, it to be close to the first 30 mile per gallon gasoline full-size pickup. Now, the Chevy Colorado diesel gets 30 mile per gallon, but that's the midsize or compact size, what do you want to call it these days. And Ram EcoDiesel gets 29 miles per gallon, but that's another diesel as well. This could get them to that level of 30 mile per gallon. If you consider that hybrids, like in the case of the Toyota Highlander, get 3 mile per gallon better than their SUV equivalent, and you figure the 2.7 liter EcoBoost F-150 nets 25 mile per gallon city highway right now. When you look at that, when you look at those numbers, and you add 3 to that, you're going to get 28, okay? So if you figure 28, and that the 2.7 liter only comes in a 6-speed automatic, so now you talk about a 10-speed in that. Okay, so you get a little bit better fuel economy there. Yeah, you could possibly do it. You're going to be really close. I anticipate some advancements in aerodynamics, some advancement in next generation F-150, improvements in regenerative braking by then. You could be right at 30 miles per gallon, which is exceptional on a full-size pickup. Old Swede, sitting outside, I think he gets like 12 miles per gallon. So there's a lot of improvement in the last 50 years, to say the least. Your other change is going to be towing and hauling. You're not going to be able to tow and haul as much as you could with this naturally aspirated engine. You're basically going to, this truck is for somebody who wants a truck, wants a size, wants the optional, very optional towing and hauling, but still wants that truck look. Another expectation is a muted exhaust sound. This could be a big deal to some people. The reality is when you do a hybrid powertrain and you're doing the smaller displacement engine, then you're doing a battery power, and then you're doing electric motor, you're just not going to have much exhaust sound. Ford has dealt with this before. They had the Raptor that doesn't have that much exhaust sound since they went from a 3.5 liter EcoBoost over the larger 6.2 liter V8. They lost the sound there. But last I checked, the Raptor was still drawing a lot of interest. So I don't know if that's that big of a deal anymore. You're also going to be talking higher price. I would anticipate it's going to be about $2,000 to $3,000 option over the like a stock V6, which you know it's going to come down to people wanting to save that fuel economy, going to pay a premium for that fuel economy improvements. And then the last thing is you're going to see, it'll be the same design as the F-150 is currently. I don't think that's going to change at all. I think you'll find that it's going to be offered in a variety of smaller cab configurations or not so big axle ratios. Ideally, these are fleet customers. These are occasional, very, very occasional towing customers. And this is going to be a lightweight truck that's really meant for fuel economy. It's not going to be meant for big, heavy-duty hauling. So expect that truck in 2020. We're going to learn some more in the next couple of years, and we'll see what it comes out with and what the true numbers are like. But I would anticipate that it's going to be all about fuel economy, very little towing and hauling, and it's going to really piss off the loyalists who think trucks should only be used for towing and hauling. But that's what we're going to. That's, you know, the majority of people these days tow with an empty bag all the time. They're towing air, and that's what you see. Also making news this week is a little preview of the North American International Auto Show going on next week. Ram released that they're going to have a Ram Rebel. It's going to be the black edition. It's going to be, I wrote, Darth Vader would be proud of this truck. It's going to be black on black with some black and some black accents and black interior with black exterior accents and black interior upgrades, seats in the catskin leather, and black. Yes, it's going to be a black truck. Basically, it's basically a blacked out version of the Ram Rebel. They've been really popular with this truck. They've done a really good job. This is their off-road looking truck. It takes the stock truck and beefs it up with 33-inch tires, factory lift. It's got air suspension. It's got new styling. It's got that new grill that the Power Wagon kind of took off a little bit from it. So it's got some really good looks to it. It's definitely not a Raptor competitor as far as performance, but it's the smart money choice. You know, if you're looking to get that really cool, unique truck, but you don't really need to go Baja 100 miles an hour, then the Rebel's a really good choice. So it's going to be all black. I mean, I'm joking around, but really it's black and black and black. It's going to have some black interior accents with some gray pinstriping. It's called a light gray. Where's the wordage for it? I should just had it. Light slate gray accent stitching. They'll go through instrument panel, center console lid, doors and seats, and you see this little like pinstriping basically going around and stuff. You can get some optional black leather catskin seats to give you more of a luxury feel. Yeah, it's gonna be a nice looking truck. The only problem I ever have with black on black with black and black trucks and Jeeps as well. I had a Jeep and SUVs is that they look awesome. In like muted light, late afternoon, early mornings, you get them out in the sun, and boy, they don't look that great to me. It seems like they're very much muted. But I'll wait and see. I'm gonna wait and see how it looks in the full sunlight. The photos they sent me to use on the website were in the daytime. There's not a whole lot of sun. You got some snow. You got some contrast. I'll be interested to see how it works out here in Nebraska out with the dirt fields and the corn crops and things like that during the summertime. See how that black stands out. Also, it's kind of a pain to clean. But hey, you want black, you can get it. Next, let's talk sales numbers. Sales numbers for the year have been posted. We're done. 2016 is over. Hey, welcome to 2017. The numbers are in, and this year, it's been an interesting mix for the year. It's been interesting results. We had Ford, the F-Series, was up 5.2% on the year, which is a pretty good growth for them. When you consider the numbers are really strong overall. Silverado was down 4.3%. Ram Truck was up 8.7%. They continue to grow their market share. GMC Sierra was down 1.1%. And then we get the surprises, the really surprises lately. The Toyota Tacoma was up 6.7%. They have a new model. They have a new TRD Pro. They have some new stuff going out there, but still, 191,000 units for the year, and GMC Sierra had 221,000 units. So you're only talking 30,000 units difference between a full-size and a mid-size. It's really interesting. Next, Toyota Tundra had down near negative 2.9% on the year, which is still pretty holding pretty strong for that truck. I do anticipate a new Tundra next month in Chicago. Chevrolet Colorado came in at 28.8% increase year-to-year, 108,000 units. That is pretty impressive for a truck that we all considered was pretty much dead. And then you have the Nissan Frontier, the oldest truck on the planet. Nissan Frontier was up 38.4%. I think that's going back to when it first launches. That's the numbers of when it came back when it first launched. That's how well it's doing. Cheapest truck on the market. Cheap, midsize. You can get the Pro 4X, which is a fun package. I like it. 38.4%. GMC Canyon comes in ninth. They were up 24.5%. They'll always play second fiddle to the Chevy model. Honda Ridgeline. They had the biggest increase for the year for anybody. They were up 4,451%. Yes, 4,451%. It's a pretty amazing number, but when you look at total sales, it was 23,000 units. That's not so amazing. So they just, you know, for example, December, they sold 4,000 units, and the year before they sold 2. That's why your numbers are all messed up. Nissan Titan rounds off the list. They had 21,880 units sold, 80% increase. I still contend that they really got to do a better job on that. I mean, you look at a Toyota Tundra, and the Tundra sold 115,000 units. And the Nissan Titan, you can make the argument, is very much a 1-2 competitor to Tundra. If you're looking at, you know, the non-quote domestics, and you're looking at new products, you know, they're off almost 100,000 units. You know, and they offer two different sizes. They offer the XD and the half ton. So the Nissan Titan definitely could use some sales boosts. And that's it for the news. Next week's episode, just a preview, is next week's the North American International Auto Show in Detroit, the biggest auto show of the year. I'm not hearing a whole lot of truck news will come out of that. I do hear that there's one major truck news coming out of that. I haven't heard anything beyond that. So next week's episode is going to be all about the North American International Auto Show. I'll talk about some SUVs and trucks. But let's move on this show to our special guests. Up first, we have Mike Wiedemann. He is the GM, large, full-size SUV. He's got some crazy title. We talked to him about the Chevy Suburban we had a few weeks ago. Chevy Suburban is one of the oldest nameplates in the industry, and it's kind of interesting. It doesn't get a whole lot of press coverage. And then we followed with Brian Mutchler. He's with the ARE. I've gotten to know ARE over the years. I went and visited them a couple years ago in Michigan, and they have some great products. I really wish I could do some more, but I don't think they have a lot that fits the 62 Chevy. So, and then we'll wrap it up with more on the fantastic Honda Snowblower with the name of HSS13328, we call it just Big Red. Follow up with the Honda Big Red Snowblower. And we'll be back. And we're back with Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. I'm your host, Tim Estradol. Today we have a special guest, Mike Wiedemann. He is the marketing and advertising manager for Suburban and Tahoe. I recently had the Chevy Suburban. If you recall, I did a podcast a couple weeks ago in the Suburban showing off how quiet it is on my drive home from Nashville. From the airport, I flew from Nashville. It's a long story. So, welcome to the show, Mike.
Well, it's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for calling in. So, Mike, you have on top of two of the most iconic Chevy vehicles there in Michigan, in my opinion. You go up north and you're taking a Suburban or a Tahoe, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, when you go up I-75 heading north to all the vacation homes, it's a sea of full-size utilities heading north. And once you get to a ski resort, for certainly, it's a one large SUV after another. And, you know, fortunately, large preponderance of those are Tahoes and Suburbans.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you see them everywhere. I've been up north in Michigan quite often, and they're all over the place. Now, what's interesting is this is one of the oldest nameplates in the industry, right?
Yeah, it's been around since 1935. In fact, it is indeed the oldest, longest-running nameplate in the automotive industry.
Yeah, I saw it. I've seen a few at auto shows, some older Suburbans. It's interesting how much they've evolved, how much things have the vehicle has kept its size and gotten a little bit bigger, but it serves its purpose still. You're still going to haul, you know, what are we hauling, 7-8 people now in the Suburbans?
You can haul up to 9.
Holy cow.
And you can do it very comfortably. That, you know, that's the great thing about it. With a Suburban, you get to haul both people and stuff and do it very comfortably.
And you're still going to tow quite a bit, too. You can load up the boat or load up the RV and put a bunch of people in there and still tow quite a bit, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely. You can tow up to 300 pounds with a Suburban. So pretty much anything you want to tow, it's available for you.
Yeah, and a couple years ago, you guys changed the styling of this. You have more straighter lines. It's more sharper exterior. Years ago, Suburban used to be pretty rounded on the exterior. Is the sharpening lines, is that just a new designer, or does that have some aerodynamics improvements there too?
Well, you know, I'm not an engineer, so I can't, you know, totally speak to that. But I can tell you, you know, with that luck, we are getting 23 miles per gallon on the highway with a Suburban, which is the best in its segment. So it's kind of hard to imagine you can get that kind of fuel economy out of that large a vehicle.
Yeah, you guys are kind of the segment.
We absolutely do dominate this segment between town and Suburban. We have about 50% of the full-size utility segment. And then once you throw our brother division GMC into it, we really dominate this segment. So it's something we really enjoy here at General Motors.
Yeah, and help me understand this. This is sometimes confusing. So the Suburban, you hold 9, but then you have the – is it the Tahoe XL or the Yukon XL? Which one is it?
Tahoe is the short wheelbase version for Chevrolet. And then for GMC, they have the Yukon, which is the short wheelbase, and Yukon XL, which is the sister vehicle to Suburban.
Okay, so you could get the GMC version if – okay. I always get that confused and I'm – what the differences there are. What are we talking about as far as engines? We still got the 5.3-liter V8 in it, right?
Yes, exactly. That's the one and only engine for our Tahoe and Suburban.
Yeah, and you're 23 miles per gallon. It's got good horsepower. It's got good up – you know, I drove and did some duck hunting with it and it towed a pretty heavy trailer pretty well. You know, decoys, they weigh a lot. No, I mean, the trailer was old, you know, these get these hand-me-down trailers built out of solid steel. The trailer was heavy, the decoys, you know, not so much. What are your product mix? You got the LTZ, LT, and then did I see there's a new Midnight Edition with the Z71 in it?
Yeah, we're real excited about our Midnight Editions. They just went into production last month. We have an LT Midnight and a Z71 Midnight. What we're really trying to do is leverage that strong, you know, the strong Midnight presence we already have out there with Silverado and Colorado. The Z71 Midnight is a really aggressive-looking truck. It's been very well-received. Any place we've shown so far, all our auto shows are asking for Z71 Midnights to display, so it's been extremely popular for us. So that's, you know, that's some of our big news for 17. We also came out with a couple new packages in 16 and carried them into 17, our all-season package and our signature package that have been selling very, very well for us. So the sales have been great. Share is up this year. We feel really good about Tahoe Suburban, and we just want to keep the momentum going.
Aren't these products kind of bucking the trend, though? I mean, you know, fuel prices have dropped, and so people are buying these again. Do you see much of a difference as fuel prices have changed the last couple of years on what sales have been with the Suburban?
You know, this segment really peaked back the late 1990s, early 2000s, when everybody had to have a full-size SUV, and the sales numbers were huge. But since they've come back down to normal rates, they're really holding quite steady over the last decade or so. And basically, Suburban is a needs-based vehicle. You know, you don't go out and buy a Suburban unless you need capacity to haul people and stuff. So it is a finite group of people, but it's a vehicle that serves their purposes extremely well. Because of the shorter wheelbase units, those tend to be a little more want-based vehicles. I talked to like a neighbor of mine who lives across the lake, and it's just him and his wife, no kids, and I was asking what he's getting for his next vehicle. He says, I'm gonna get a Tahoe. And I said, well, what are you going to get a Tahoe for? He goes, because I want one. So there's a kind of difference between the two.
Yeah, I don't see a Chevy Volt customer cross-shopping Suburban.
No, you don't get a whole lot of that.
Have the customer's needs changed with Suburban over the years? You guys have a lot more technology in them. Are we doing more with, like, infotainment screens and DVD players and backseat video game hookups and things?
Yeah, it goes beyond just the DVD players. As you know, as you get into the wireless world here, you know, we have up to 14 charging locations in a Suburban. This past year, we put an HDMI connection for video adaptation. We have standard Wi-Fi in Tahoe Suburban, are some of the highest users of Wi-Fi within General Motors. We have Android Auto and Apple CarPlay in the vehicle, so you can hook your phone up and have the functionality of your smartphone right on the screen of your vehicle. So just tons and tons of technology to these vehicles. So, you know, every person, they're made for long trips. And with all the connectivity we have inside the vehicle, everybody can be very comfortable on a trip, be connected, and have whatever type of entertainment they'd like.
Yeah, I've talked about this before in other podcasts. I thought the 4G LTE Wi-Fi
was kind of a gimmick, but then I took my kids camping, and holy cow, did I need that.
Right? Really, to enjoy the benefits of it. And then, you know, also, you don't get that big, giant phone bill as well.
Yeah, it's quite impressive how much you need that technology. You don't think you need it, but then you have it, and it's like, wow, does that make a big difference?
Like a microwave oven. Once you've used one, you don't want to go without one, right?
Right.
I guess I'm showing my age there, but.
Well, you got to be older for the oldest nameplate in industry, right? You got to be experienced. Yeah, an experienced product. All right, what's our price range for these Suburbans these days?
You know, you're going to range from around $50,000 for an entry-level Suburban, and you can get up into the $70,000-plus range if you take we've changed over from LTZ to Premier for the 17 model year. If you take Premier level and you add every option feasible on it, you have a luxury liner living room rolling down the road.
Yeah, that you can still play your Xbox on. I mean, it's fantastic.
Exactly.
All right, it sounds good. I was just, like I said, I had one last week. I was driving around. I thought, you know, I don't talk about Suburban very much. It's one of those products that it sells. It continues to sell, continues to buck the trend. It may not be the sexiest new sports car with electric motors and stuff these days, but, you know, it's a solid product for you guys. What do you think? What's the future look like for Suburban? You guys got much more you can do with this product?
I don't know if you want to do much more with it. I mean, we'll keep advancing it as technology advances. We will roll that technology into Suburban. Since it's been here since 1935, it's obviously got a place in American tradition here, and we'll continue to sell Suburbans for those families out there that need that level of capability and cargo and people carrying aspect of it. So I foresee it having a long future ahead of us.
Yeah, it's going to be one of the products I'm going to keep an eye on. I foresee, and you won't be able to answer this, I foresee a diesel getting into the Suburban. You're using it throughout your lineup. Fuel economy is a big issue. 25% better out of the box. I mean, you're thinking about a $70,000 Suburban that could get 25% better, so 27 mile per gallon highway. That's pretty impressive. It definitely is an exciting product to keep an eye on. So we'll be right back with more Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. Thanks for being on the show. And welcome back to Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. I'm your host, Mr. Dahl. We have a special guest in the program. We have Brian Mutchler. He's a marketing manager for ARE. If you don't know ARE, they do the bed covers, they do the rollout, the tonneau covers. They do a lot of exciting different products there. I've actually toured the facility. It's really an impressive company. So welcome to the program, Brian.
Yeah, thank you very much, Tim.
And so let's kick this off by going back in time a little bit. We didn't get a chance to hook up before SEMA, but you guys were recently at the SEMA show, the Specialty Equipment Manufacturers Association show in Vegas. It's one of the biggest aftermarket shows probably in the world, I would guess. Would you say the world?
Yes, it is.
It's crazy because that show, it's like you can look at lifted trucks with covers, with all sorts of custom interiors. Then you go around the aisle and there's new windshield wipers. I mean, it's got a variety of different things. It's really, really a crazy show. So what'd you guys do there at SEMA?
Well, we actually had a booth, a pretty large booth, actually. ARE is a subsidiary of Truck Hero, and so there's about 9 of us manufacturers under the Truck Hero umbrella. We had this very large booth, out there at the SEMA show in Vegas, and ARE displayed 3 trucks out there in our section of the booth, and we showed each truck had a new product on it, 2 truck caps and 1 aluminum retractable lift-up tonneau cover.
Yeah, I was looking that up. You guys call that the double cover, don't you?
Yep, that's correct. One of the things with this double cover, our specialty has been fiberglass painted to match tonneau covers. And obviously, over the last number of years, there's been this big buzz in the market regarding the functionality of fold-up covers, roll-up covers, retractable covers. And the double cover is ARE's answer to providing the market something a little bit new and unique, and puts a nice little twist on the the fold-up cover or roll-up cover. So what ours kind of does, it's made out of aluminum, and it lifts up like our standard popular fiberglass LS2 model. So it lifts up from the rear for quick access, but if you need full access to your bed, it will also retract as well. So you kind of get the best of both worlds. And there's no other tonneau cover out there right now that provides both of those functions. And that's how we kind of came up with the name, the double cover, kind of a dual function tonneau cover.
Yeah, and it's made out of aluminum, right? So it's a lighter weight material. It's not a like that really heavy tonneau cover.
Yep, that's correct.
And this is going to be out in the summer of 2017, do you think, or the spring?
Yeah, right now we're actually tooling up production for it, and by the time that's complete and we're ready to go, we're looking at probably mid to late summer 2017 to get that out to the market.
Yeah, I actually, while I was there touring facility last year, I had a sneak peek at this, and it's an incredible product. It, you know, tonneau covers, and especially the hard tonneau covers like you guys have built, the fiberglass ones, are great for keeping stuff, you know, water damage getting in the back of the bed, but you do have to pick it up. You'd have to lift it up, and then my dad actually has one of these, and when he goes to put stuff in the bed, you got to take it out. Like if something's going to set up higher than a tonneau cover, you got to take the tonneau cover off, and then you got to store it. And then you got to load your, you know, like say you're putting a lawnmower in there or a weed whacker, or not a weed whacker, but a tiller, but the handles go over the top of the tonneau cover. You have this issue now that you have this space issue. So, but then, you know, you don't always want the topper because toppers aren't always the greatest looking things. You don't always need all the kind of storage. You know, you still want to keep that nice look of the bed. And this, you can actually retract the tonneau cover back and you can actually lift it up. So you're right. It's definitely the best worlds. Something I'm excited to see. I'm excited to see in the marketplace, and I think you're going to have a lot of consumers buying this product. So,
we think so. We got a lot of great feedback at SEMA about it. So,
yeah, I think it's that one really caught my eye. I was looking through the different materials you had today, and that one really caught my eye. So then you had three vehicles there in your booth. I saw one of these that I wanted to talk about. You called it the Evil Tundra, which is kind of interesting. So it's a Toyota Tundra, and it looks evil, and it does look evil. It's got these spikes coming out of the wheel wells. How did you guys come up with these ideas?
Well, that wasn't us. That was actually, one of our, I guess you'd say, a marketing partner. We hook up with our truck builders across the U.S., and the builder of this Evil Tundra, they had actually approached us about using our product on their truck, and obviously the concept of it was really appealing and really eye-catching, as you saw out there, so we were happy to be a part of that build.
Sure. So the guy comes to you with the Evil Tundra, and you're like, heck yeah, that looks great. All right, that makes sense to me.
Yep, that's exactly right. So, I'll say the truck that we did have a hand in building, it was kind of our build. We had a truck in the Ford booth called the Gold Standard Project Truck, that we had partnered with Ford to do. And our builder here in Ohio, in the Columbus, Ohio area, Trent's Trick Upholstery, actually did the build for us, but we worked closely with him kind of on the concept of what it would look like, and what we had come up with was the gold standard, and you can view that on our website at the4ary.com, and we have some a lot of pictures and videos about it, and like I said, it was in the Ford booth out at SEMA, but very, very cool truck. Very cool paint scheme, eye-catching, and it features one of our new products we're set to release here in the first quarter called the Evolution model of truck cab. You know, basically one of the things that we've done is we're kind of changing the game on how fiberglass truck cabs are built, and this Gold Standard Project truck was one of the first trucks to feature this new window and door technology that we're using.
Yeah, it's. I saw some stuff about that. I actually have the product truck on my website as well, thepickuptrucktalk.com. It's under the listing of Ford F-150 concept trucks from SEMA. I saw there was some stuff about the windows. I didn't quite catch what the press release was saying. What is it about these windows that makes them so special?
Yeah, basically what, the history of the truck cap industry, the fiberglass truck cap industry, is that, you know, we pretty much all use the same kind of windows that are, held in with an aluminum inner clamp ring, you put the window in, it's got some foam tape, there's a aluminum clamp ring inside, the screws run through, and it pulls the window tight, and ideally keeps, keeps all the water out, and, that sort of thing. Well, one of the things that we're doing with the side windows on these new models of caps that are being released is we're going to use window urethane technology. So there's going to be no more aluminum clamp ring that holds them in. It's going to be a nice all-glass flush-mounted window that is urethaned in, much like the windshield of your car is.
Really?
So it's really going to do a lot to clean up the appearance, both inside and out, on the truck cap, and it's also going to do a much better job at keeping the weather out and not being prone to leaking over the course of the life of the cap. So that's kind of a big change as far as the window design goes, and for us, it's a pretty big investment into reconfiguring our manufacturing facility to utilize this technology. So we're in the process of doing that right now, and we're going to be introducing those new side windows and front windows here in the next couple months.
So what you're telling me is things are busy there at ARE.
They are very busy. We have a lot of people running in a lot of different directions. But I was just down on the shop floor a couple days ago, and the transformation that's happening is amazing, and it's going to be pretty exciting. And we're really anxious to roll this new design out to the market. You know, we think it's going to be received very well, and we feel that at ARE we're engineering out and investing in a lot of the new manufacturing technologies and new products that will help answer a lot of the concerns people had about truck caps in the past.
Sure. So looking forward to this next year. You got the new windows coming out. You have the new double cover coming out. What other new year plans do you have?
Well, associated with the new windows, we're also changing up the rear door on the caps as well. So that's kind of coming out at the same time. And with the new rear door, it's going to be what's called a complex bent glass that's going to come down and conform to the tailgate. So basically, today's truck caps, you see a lot of them, the doors actually sit above the tailgates and then have like a plastic or fiberglass contour strip.
Yeah.
That kind of comes down and molds around the tailgate to help keep things, weather resistant and secure. But with that, there's problems associated with doing it that way too. And sometimes the quality that people expect with today's truck isn't always there. So this new rear door, it's going to eliminate that contour strip. It's going to bring the glass all the way down, and that glass is just going to conform around the tailgate. A lot of, like what you see with SUVs and their hatches and stuff. And then with that, we're going to have a brand new handle and locking system associated with it. It's going to be a lot more intuitive than our current handle, easier to open and close, easier to lock. So pretty exciting stuff with the rear door as well. That's going to answer a lot of concerns that people have had over the years.
Nice. So you guys are evolving to meet customers' demands.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, just look at the trucks that are hitting the road today. I mean, they're not the truck of the 80s and 90s. So it's definitely time for truck caps to evolve with the new models of trucks.
Yeah. I have a 62 Chevy C10. I know they're not even close to the same trucks they used to be.
So if a customer wants to learn more about ARE, what's your website? Where are they going to go to see more of your products?
Yep. The best place to go is to our website. That'd be the number 4, ARE.com. We have our whole product line up there. You're not going to see the new products up there yet because they're not quite ready, but you're going to see our current line, a lot of information about the company. And then we have a dealer locator on there that you'll be able to punch in your zip code and find your closest ARE dealer. And you can also go on there and configure a cap to your own specifications, what you would like, and submit that to get a quote from your nearest ARE dealer as well.
Nice. Well, thanks for being on the program today.
Absolutely, Tim. It's my pleasure.
And we'll be right back with more Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk.
Finally, on today's podcast, let's talk more about Big Red. Yes, Big Red is the Honda snowblower. Again, it's got the long engineering name on it. They have a cool name. I think I like the Honda Rebel snowblower or the Honda Raptor snowblower. I think they get some fun with that. That'd be kind of cool. This thing is really impressive. It's got a hydrostatic drive, and so what happens is you just put it forward or reverse, and it takes off. It's got the fuel turn off. So you don't waste fuel as it sits in the garage. You have your fuel you have the throttle control to control the speed of the auger in front, which, by the way, the auger should be considered a weapon. That thing is impressive. It's a two-stage, has 32-inch width. Honda says it throws 2,750 pound-feet per minute, which I'm not going to argue with them. It shoots 56 feet in the air. I haven't really tested that with the tape measure, but I can tell you from experience watching it throw snow, I'm not going to argue with it. I think it can do it. It throws quite a bit. And it's kind of got a price to it. Yes, for the pull start version, which is the version we have, the price is $3,189, and $3,399 would be the price for the electric. I got to tell you, driving it, operating it, I used to have a single stage. And I've had the single stage and now this two stage. The single stage I had was just a consumer one off the rack of Menards. It wasn't anything fancy. Operating this snowblower, you have to take time. You have to take a lot of time and think about what you're doing. Make a plan. It's so beastly. It's big. It's a little bit tough to turn and operate. It's taken me a little while to get the knack of it. It's got, instead of wheels, it's got treads, and so it's got individual left turn and right turn on the handle. So essentially what it does, when you put in the left turn and you want to turn left, it basically freezes that left tread and makes the right tread go. So that way you're just turning, that's how you're going to turn. Same thing on the right tread. But you just got to do some thinking. I used it 2 days ago for the first time, and then I used it yesterday and today. So I've had 2 days of using it outside. And like I said, we had about 6 inches of snow. We had a pretty good snowfall come through. And the first day I used it, I used a lot of the throttle control to control, you know, how fast the mower was going. And what I've learned to do is I've learned a little more finesse. It's a little more finesse when you're turning this around and using it. Instead of using the forward and reverse. And what we can do with that is you don't have to go all the way in with forward. You don't have to go all the way back with the reverse. I just kind of baby a little bit. If I'm going to make a left-hand turn, I put it in neutral. I engage my drivetrain. I hold down my left turn, which is it's like a bike, the bike lock, you know, when you put your bike brakes on, it's got kind of a lever. And then I just give it a little bit of forward momentum, just a little bit on the forward on the hydrostatic, and that just allows that thing to turn just smooth. It makes almost a 360 degree turn while it's standing still, which is really impressive. And then I've gotten to use the there's an adjustment on the auger on the front. You can raise it up and down by basically to press your button, press your finger. I mean, it's a little lever, and you just touch it and lean on the handles up or down, the handles coming off the backside, and you can literally raise it and lower it as that quick and as fast as you need. I've done some playing around with that. I've been playing around with the right height. Unfortunately, a few times I've done it too high, and I've had to go back areas through it and get used to it. I've also noticed that it beats the heck out of ice. Like, it'll rip ice apart. It'll just take ice and it just spits it back out in little chunks. And so I've been trying not to damage the augers too badly or shred it or shear a bolt, And so I've been kind of going slow and going over things once or twice to make sure I don't get down too low, where I'm literally taking all the snow off completely and going right down to the pavement. I don't want to damage it, and I'm okay with a little snow on the ground. But it will totally rip up that snow, rip up the ice. The other cool thing is it's kind of a really thought thing. Honda's really thought this through. So you have the two control arms, like I said. They're basically like bike arms, okay, like a bicycle, but they come out to you. So like those townie, those cruiser bikes that have those handlebars come out to you. On the one hand, on your left hand side, you have engage the drivetrain and engage the drive motor, not drivetrain, but drive motor, and move you forward or backward depending on what you put the reverse or forward on. On the other side is engage the auger. What's great about this is when you engage the drive and the auger controls, right? You got them both engaged. You can let go of the auger side with your right hand. You can let that go because as long as the drive is engaged and you had previously engaged the auger will stay engaged, right? So you can put down the drive, you can put down the auger, you can get them both going, and you can take your right hand off, okay? This makes a difference because the chute where the snow comes out of has a joystick remote. Okay, it's basically right next to your right hand is this remote control. And as you're driving, it's driving the damn thing. As you're going, you can take this joystick and you can move around where you want the snow chute to shoot out of, right? And then you can actually adjust it up and down as far as where it shoots the snow. And allows you to play around with that. And then it allows you to take that right hand and control the forward and reverse momentum. And control, you actually should do the throttle as well if you want to. But it gives you that flexibility of having that hand free to drive, to you know, engage, to turn right, turn left, or turn right, to do the joystick, to put forward or reverse. It gives you that flexibility to really have more control of the machine. And I've learned after operating this, you know, like I said, 2 days, and I'm hoping to do it one more time, and at least 5 or 6 more times this winter. I mean, we're just getting started on snowfall. Is that I'm using less speed. I'm finding the slower I go, the better job I go, which is, you know, naturally the case with most power equipment. But it really does an amazing job of clearing the snow. And one of the great things is maybe it sounds lazy, but 32-inch width means I can do the sidewalks in one pass. And I've been doing my neighbor's sidewalks too. I've been going across the street and doing my neighbor's because I can just drive straight down past my neighbor's house, turn, go across the street, then come back to my house, and I'm just making one pass. And it's clearing all the snow, and it makes a nice cut through the snow. It's nice and crisp. I went through some snow that was just kind of, basically everything's covered over, and it just makes a nice crisp line, cuts right through it, leaves no trace, and it dispels it really easily and quickly. And the pole start, I was really surprised. I was concerned about being cold. You know, and we had -5 degrees this morning when I started up the snowblower. I was concerned about being cold, and usually pole starts and engines and things, I mean, they work. But I just, it's not something I really always like to pull. But, you know, I tell you what, you turn on the gas, you pull the choke, turn it on. It's got a little key that turns it on. And one pull, I'm doing a half pull. I don't even need to do the one pull, and it fires right up. And then you can tell it's fired right up, turns right on. There's a little LED light that shines that I've used a little bit in the mornings, which is nice. I mean, you know, snow reflects light pretty well, so you don't need it too much. But it's nice to have. And then, you know, you're ready to go. The treads. Finally, I got to talk about the treads. The treads are amazing on this thing. I've had a snowblower with wheels. Usually I deal with wheels all the time. And the thing is usually slip and slide, and then you got to use your muscle to keep it on track. This thing is so heavy, I don't think I could use my muscle mass to control it if it slipped and slide. It's just too big of a snowblower for me physically. I'm not a big physical guy, but it's really a heavy-duty snowblower. I can tell you that with those treads, I can stop it, I can turn it, and it controls. It keeps control. It doesn't slide at all. Hell, I'm the guy out there sliding around with my snow boots on. I'm sliding around like crazy, and this thing is holding still, and it's great. So check it out. Honda Power Equipment. Go to your local dealer. It's the HSS1332AT model. It's the pole start. You'll see it. It's shockingly to look at. My neighbors came over when I unboxed it. My father-in-law stopped by when I unboxed it. People have been asking about it. I mean, when you see it, you know that person's serious about getting rid of some snow, and that's what this machine is. I'm definitely going to have a lot of fun with it. It goes back next year, or later on this year. It goes in the fall this year. It's going to be a sad day when it goes back, because I'm hoping to use it quite a bit. And I literally think it could double for soil removal. You could drive it through and redo your yard if you want to, tear up some grass. I've inadvertently tatted up some grass out there, and it just chews right through it. So it's a lot of fun. Check us out on Facebook on Pickup Truck Talk. Make sure you check us website, pickuptrucktalk.com. You can follow me on Instagram on tEstradol, on tim.estradol, I believe it is, on Instagram, on Twitter on tEstradol. And we'll be back next week's show from all of the North American International Auto Show. We'll have all the reveals. We'll talk about the new products. And we'll see you next week.